Hey, it's Andy, aka Mr. L, here to give you some advice on making a podcast, from planning to execution, and I've enlisted the help of some people more experienced than I am. The music you just heard was from my bud Rob's band, Early Aughts. Rob, who teaches at Hope College in Michigan, also produces a podcast.
My name is Rob Kanagi, and I make a podcast called We Mildly Care About the NBA.
You need a good, a healthy dosage of both elements, and it has to be, you know, around 50-50 between your peanut butter and your jelly.
Oh, that's too high. That's too, way too high. That's a sloppy sandwich.
What do you think Russell Westbrook's plan of attack is?
I'll tell you. It has to be Skippy peanut butter, strawberry jelly, not jam, on toasted wheat bread cut diagonally.
I've also enlisted the help of Jared Gibbs, who teaches in the Virginia Tech English department with me. Some of you may have had classes with him. He's an amazing pianist, he made that little music you just heard, and he produces a podcast too. Here he is.
Okay, so the podcast I do is called 425 Shanks, the podcast, and I do it in my office, which is 425 Shanks.
Now, 425 Shanks features Jared interviewing other faculty members about their research as well as other interests. If you ever wanted to know more about the fascinating work your teachers do outside of class, definitely subscribe to 425 Shanks on iTunes. Here are just a couple clips of Jared interviewing English faculty member Gina Chandler-Smith, who talks about her own musical talents and describes what it was like to receive a negative review of her scholarship.
You mentioned music. That was the next thing I was going to ask you about. So, early on when I came here and people found out I played the piano, a couple of people said, you know, Gina sings. So you have a background in music as well.
I do. Were I not an English major, I probably would have been a music major. Oh. And actually one of my regrets is I should have double majored. I don't want to say this because I don't want to sound unappreciative. It was a painful review, but it clearly showed a reviewer who took the time to give me feedback.
Right.
So I think a lot of times what happens in academic circles when you get something back and you've labored over it and then you get a review that, you know, kind of cuts your heart out, some of us kind of brush it off and keep moving. And I'm honest to say that initially at that point in my life, that's not what happened.
You can hear more of that again by subscribing to 425 Shanks on iTunes, and We Mildly Care About the NBA also on iTunes. You can find that one on SoundCloud as well. Now, I asked both Jared and Rob what they see as the exigence or the need that inspired them to make the podcasts. Jared started 425 Shanks mostly for fun, he said, but then he realized that in a big department, we don't always know what our colleagues are working on.
I kind of as a way to just find out what the hell everybody's doing since the department's so big.
See? He found a need. Faculty members don't know what's going on with each other because the department's so big, and decided a podcast would be a great way to meet that need. But what about Rob? What need does We Mildly Care About the NBA meet?
You know, I'm a fan of a small market team, the Indiana Pacers, and they don't ever get covered. You don't even see them on ESPN. They're never on. And I don't know. I just kind of got tired of the same basketball news over and over and over and over and over again. And I imagine that some other people did too. And also, there's just this really goofy side to the NBA. There's something kind of goofy about it. And I like talking about that. I like thinking about that. And I don't really know all that many sports publications or podcasts that cover that side. And so it seemed like a good idea.
Again, Rob found a need. Other podcasts don't cover small market teams, and they definitely don't cover the goofier side of the NBA. His podcast does both. So, rule number one. Meet a need for an audience. Here's how Rob envisions his audience.
You know, my audience, I was thinking that it would primarily be people who had some familiarity with the NBA, but didn't know all that much about it. And I started to realize that it's actually people that really know a lot about the NBA, way more than I know, kind of dig it too. So I think it's because they get to laugh at us, like, being morons. So I think we try to make the episodes as accessible as possible. So even if you don't know anything at all about the NBA, you're still going to find what we're talking about like interesting. Maybe not. I don't know.
Now, Jared's audience is mostly faculty members here in the department, though I think students would like his podcast too. Either way, I asked him how much he analyzed his rhetorical situation. He told me his analysis helps him make sure that each episode is purpose-driven.
Of course, I had to ask those questions, right? Like, what purpose is it going to serve? Fundamentally, it was, like, how am I going to generate content? What the hell am I going to talk about? I'm not a particularly chatty person. So it has to be pretty purpose-driven. And then, of course, I also was thinking in terms of audience. Is there anything I could talk about that someone's going to want to hear me talk about, even if it's a very small audience? And that's partially what led me to focus it the way I did. Is I'm under no illusions about how entertaining I am as a person, but I just try to find interesting things that people are doing. So the subject itself is interesting, and it can help overcome any ineptness on my part, right?
Yeah.
So I wasn't always thinking about it explicitly in rhetorical terms, but that's certainly what it was, especially in terms of audience and purpose.
When I asked what Jared would do differently, he realized the importance of knowing your purpose ahead of time.
If I had to start over again, I would come at it with a much clearer plan for thinking of it more as a composition, as an essay or a paper with an arc, that I want it to go somewhere.
So, rule number two, plan ahead. I also asked Jared and Rob about the differences between podcasting and traditional writing, and specifically about the challenges that podcasting poses.
And with a podcast, you have to spend some time. The product, your podcast, you know, it sometimes takes hours to edit and throw together, just because, you know, it's worth it to get your quality.
I asked Jared if, like Rob, he spent a lot of time editing.
It depends a little bit. I've gotten better. So the more I've done it, I've been able to shape the actual recording so that I have to do less editing later. The less I script things, the more I have to be careful about, like, pulling out whole chunks that they might be kind of interesting, but they don't actually progress the arc of the podcast or the piece at all, right? So you have to kind of cut them because it's just adding to length. And I try to aim for an hour-ish in length. But you always have to do some editing, dead spaces and, you know, all the ums and uhs. And I try to clean that up as much as possible just because it's tedious to listen to. When the person's not right there in the room with you. So sometimes it's also tedious then. But
So then, rule number three, take the time to edit. You don't need to get rid of every but if you listen closely to this podcast, you'll probably be able to guess where I cut ums, sighs, and even dead air. I'm not a professional sound engineer by any means, but even my imperfect editing is better than bad content. Editing a podcast takes a little longer than editing a paper, but it makes a big difference. Finally, I asked Rob and Jared what other advice they had. Jared emphasized the importance of making content that interests you.
I think one of the things that's helped me as I've been doing it is that one of my talents is that I can kind of get interested in anything, even if I'm not interested in it right now. But I've always been that way. Not everybody is. So don't just pick something that's doesn't really interest you, because you're not going to have fun doing it and the product isn't going to be good.
We'll call that rule number four. Show your interest and enthusiasm. If you bring your own interest and enthusiasm to the project, others could come along. People need to hear that enthusiasm in the sound of your voice. Now let's hear what other advice Rob has to give. And I think this is key.
Any other advice? I would just say that you should not ever be afraid of the technology. It's really fun to learn how to do this stuff. It's really fun to kind of roll your sleeves up and figure it out, you know? I promise it won't be that hard to do. I would just not let the technology intimidate me and kind of just be brave and go in there and have fun and figure it out. Then I would also say that it really is worth it to spend a few more minutes on it to make it sound good. It's pretty easy to tell when that stuff's kind of phoned in and not done thoughtfully. So it's totally worth it. Your audience will thank you. Just spend the extra few minutes just, you know, listening to your levels and hearing how it sounds in the headphones or in your monitors or however you're recording it.
So rule number 5, don't have fear, have fun. Interesting work is its own reward, and quality work is its own reward. And the more you can give to the work, the more you get from it. I know it's easy to forget that when you have papers due, jobs, late nights. But it's true, it really is. The technology can be a little tough to work with, but it's nothing to be afraid of. It's a toy. Play with it. Actually, it's even better than a toy, because it allows you to put your stuff out into the world to try to make something happen. So let's get started. Meet a need for an audience, plan ahead and have a clear purpose, take the time to edit, show your interest and enthusiasm, and have fun, not fear. Okay? Oh, and check out We Mildly Care About the NBA on iTunes or SoundCloud, and 425 Shanks on iTunes. All right, we'll see you in class.
You know, the technology has become relatively inexpensive and relatively easy to use and relatively high quality. So it's pretty easy to do. You can do it in your bedroom and make something sound really incredible. You could you can do it on the run too. I mean, it's also pretty portable nowadays. So, you know, the physical restrictions and financial restrictions and or limitations, and they just kind of keep getting looser and looser and looser. So it's becoming easier and easier and easier to make, you know.